We are back for episode 272. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Tim. And how are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, a couple of stories, big stories this week. We can touch on interesting. Merrick Garland has impaneled a special prosecutor to investigate January 6th and the Mar-a-Lago raid. I don't know what that means. This is interesting. Yeah, Attorney General Merrick Garland has yet to impanel a special prosecutor looking into Hunter Biden, which would be a clear conflict of interest. He's ignoring that, but they got this guy Jack Smith, a special counsel, to handle two Donald Trump related investigations after the 45th president announced his bid for a second non-consecutive term. I don't exactly know what they're actually looking for. It has something to do with January 6th and Mar-a-Lago. Are they admitting that there's a conflict of interest with that Justice Department, with Merrick Garland's Justice Department, or are they investigating the president?
They're investigating the president.
Okay, so then there is no, my understanding is you create in your panel special counsel, special prosecutor, investigator into these things when there's a conflict of interest. Like if they were to investigate Hunter Biden, that would justify the impaneling of a special counsel. You know, in this case, there's, at least theoretically, there's no conflict of interest because Trump is no longer in power. So it struck me as odd that they were, you know, first of all, they impaneled this guy who's a partisan hack. So the idea he's going to be objective in this thing is a little funny. Again, no one seems to be bothered, or at least Merrick Garland can't be bothered to investigate Hunter Biden and the Biden crime family and the fact that they're running an international shakedown operation, you know, influence peddling to countries, at least we're told, are our adversaries like China, you know, and of course their involvement with the Ukraine. I recall that I think Trump was impeached for looking into Biden's crimes.
Right.
So I thought it just, Merrick Garland, of course, can't be bothered to look into Hunter Biden as of yet. Usually you get a special counsel when there is a conflict of interest, during Iran-Contra, they had a special counsel.
Strange. Very interesting because, you know, we have discussed many times that there's a transition going on in terms of our political structure, and, mm-hmm. and it is being transformed into a clown show, so that no one would have the idea that democracy has any particular power, right? I mean, you get Rachel Levine, you know, you get just and of course. The investigation into the 1/6 insurrection. I mean, this is preposterous. You know, there's all these different aspects of it. But there was something that happened that I think is really important because it's the new, basically, leader of the House Democrats who, had they won, would have actually replaced Pelosi. Do you know who that is, Tim?
Oh, that's, yes, that is Hakeem Jeffries.
And what is his family kind of, you know, claim to fame? Are you familiar with this?
Okay. I think he represents a district in Brooklyn.
He
is the nephew of the infamous Leonard Jeffries. He was a New York professor who taught that blacks were superior to whites because of melanin.
Exactly.
No, I don't know this guy's politics is radical, you know, leftist and all that stuff. But nevertheless, he is somewhat of an acolyte of his uncle because I think he traveled with him when he was young.
Oh, yeah.
Egypt and these things, black nationalist stuff, yeah.
Right. So in other words,
anti-Semitic too, by the way. But he's put that aside for political reasons now.
Under control.
Yeah, it's under control because he sees power now.
But I mean, the idea of like putting this someone like this as the head of your party in the House, I mean, the Democratic Party has really transitioned, wouldn't you say, to just, you know, it's a clown world. It looks, as we have said, you know, it looks kind of funny and insane on the outside, but it has a very lethal purpose.
Yeah. I mean,
these are all ways to, you know, slowly transition European Americans into the idea that the political system is not for us to have any expectations regarding, and we are second-class citizens.
Yeah, these characters like Hakeem Jeffries, and it's interesting. You remember, I think it was last year that the Biden administration named one Kristen Clark, the assistant attorney general of the United States of the civil rights division of the Justice Department, who, when she was an undergrad, was again an acolyte or follower of Leonard Jeffries. She talked about melanin skin and creating a different brain, making basically blacks are physically and mentally superior to whites. More peaceful, loving. Yeah, that's the impression I get. and so she had these weird theories. Nevertheless, she's never really been forced to disavow them. But she was approved by the Senate to be the head of Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department under Joe Biden, enforcing civil rights laws, which basically are anti-white laws. That's how they're enforced. That's how they're exactly understood. And it's interesting because these characters are golems, or large, or, you know, they're kind of Jewish golems. The Jews create them, and they kind of go off the rail. Like Hakeem Jeffries talking about Jews in his youth. Same with Kristen Clark, did the same thing. They're very critical of Israel, but the moment they're given a taste of power, they drop those principles, and they can prove to be very pragmatic. But yeah, it's interesting because it's sort of this racial politics that's used. It's encouraged and promoted by the Jews, just as the Black Jewish Alliance that was created in the early 20th century that kind of broke apart in the 1960s. And it was resurrected just recently with Black Lives Matter and with funding from George Soros about six, 7 years ago. And of course, we saw reach its peak in summer of 2020 with the George Floyd riots. These characters, they lose control. They're golems. That's one of the problems when you create a force like this. And we saw this, you know, recently with Kanye West, yet another golem created by Jewish media, the entertainment industry, the rap industry that is run by Jews. He went off script and of course caught the wrath of the ADL. We've talked about that. He's no longer a billionaire overnight, gone like that. So who's in control?
Easy come, easy go.
You have, of course, the incident with Kyrie Irving, the basketball player for Brooklyn, and he just tweeted that he saw a movie, didn't say if he liked it or not, but that apparently the ADL came down on him on that. As a reaction to that, we had Dave Chappelle, the comedian, who hosted Saturday Night Live last weekend. It used to be a big media event. I don't know if it's quite as big as it used to be, but he made it bigger than it has been for several years with his supposed anti-Semitic monologue. You know, where he entertained the audience with a lot of jokes about Jewish power. You know, did you catch the monologue?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought it was. It's funny, first of all. By the way,
he's funny, so that really stands out because Saturday Night Live hasn't been funny for a very long time.
Right, that's right. They haven't been. But it, it struck me as we're looking at, you know, kind of a beginning of an awareness of the inability to talk about the kind of undemocratic control that Jews have over different aspects of America. And the reason I say that is not so much what Chappelle was talking about. I mean, his jokes were, I think, on target, but it was the audience reaction. I mean, the laughter was all spot on. They absolutely understood Chappelle's points. And it was though the unspoken reality that we all walk around in, the trance, is finally being, you know, acknowledged that we just can't talk about these things, that there is this, you know, self-regulating structure inside of us, and it is always being, you know, promoted and controlled vis-a-vis the media. And there it was. I don't In fact, I was, you know, quite moved by the whole thing, because this is really the first time, oh my gosh, I can't even remember when the problem of the undemocratic volume of power, you know, that Jews possessed in so many really important areas, certainly the media and finance, but now, of course, politically, right? Mm-hmm. This structured power that they have. And now Chappelle was just, you know, making jokes about this, and the audience was, they weren't, I mean, there was, if the audience had soured on him and just self-regulated, and I mean, this would have been a catastrophe for America. But the way the audience responded, the kind of laughter they you know, put out, and the timing of the laughter showed me anyway that this is a, you know, we now have kind of a level of understanding as a culture, you know, where we can, you know, from here we can start admitting the control that we're under and start talking about it.
Yeah, what struck me is sort of the lack of awareness, and I would say I'm not surprised by it. This is a problem that the organized jury has in these things, is their inability to appreciate the humor, because it does reflect a lot of truth. And a well-balanced, normal people would say, well, this is true. This is why it's funny. There's no introspection in how they reacted to Kanye West or Kyrie Irving. There's always the victims. They're always in the right. There's nothing for them to think about how they're behaving themselves. Perhaps this type of humor and this type of reaction is a response to how they've been behaving for several years or several decades. No evidence of introspection on their part. We had this tweet. We shouldn't. Here we go. Yeah, the Anti-Defamation League here said the CEO Jonathan Greenblatt of publicly criticized Chappelle after the comedian spent the majority of his 15-minute monologue discussing his friend Kanye West and the trouble that the rapper found himself in after tweeting October that he wanted to go DEFCON 3 on the Jews. Jonathan Greenblatt tweeted, "We shouldn't expect Dave Chappelle to serve as society's moral compass, but disturbing to see NBC, SNL not just normalize but popularize anti-Semitism." That's what he tweeted on Sunday. Again, no introspection, no appreciation of the humor. They've done nothing wrong. They didn't overreact. They're not abusing their power in any way. Any criticism, any acknowledgement of this inordinate, disproportionate Jewish power is anti-Semitism. Any criticism is anti-Semitism. This guy has a nerve to tweet, "Why are Jewish sensitivities denied or diminished at almost every turn? Why does our trauma trigger applause?" Trauma? This is trauma. Jokes, criticism, kickback, anything. It's trauma. Yeah, it's the Holocaust. This guy is sick. I mean, he doesn't even.
He is sick. Absolutely, you know, and that's so well pointed out, Tim, is that they are always traumatized by everything, and it is a kind of power that their trauma gives them, right? That because if you criticize them, you know they're going to go to DEFCON 3 on the Gentiles, you know. Yeah. If there's, but. You know, they can never change. They have to always keep that line from being crossed, because they can never permit dialogue. Mm-hmm. If dialogue occurs, you know, if people, well, let's talk about, you know, is there an undemocratic nature to Jewish power in the media? Just to have that discussion would basically start the process by which that would come to an end, right? They cannot, it can't be defended. So you can only just keep it in effect by mind control. John Stewart, the Jewish night, you know, show host, he was on with Stephen Colbert immediately after. And he, you know, I was fascinated because he was so weak and nervous. You know, he wasn't traumatized. He was trying to present that. But the fact is, I thought it seemed to me that he was actually, you know, thinking that the whole sort of psychological power was unraveling. He brought up the old, you know, kind of joke. I've heard him use this a number of times. And he said, you know, I hope someday I can meet a Christian president.
Yeah, right? I heard now, that. Yes.
He was making the case that, you know, like, gee, the Christians have all this political power. We are the victims. We have none. You know, we're being ridiculed. And it was interesting because I saw this. It was in a tweet, and there were comments, and 100% of the comments just were scathing and talking about, well, all of the presidents are Freemasons. What kind of a Christian is a Freemason? What is a Skull and Bones president? You know, is this a Christian? How about Harry Truman, you know, with his Masonic apron? And I mean, you know, these details, which come from the independent media, so we can take an accolade for this, are now starting to get into the public domain because Stewart's mind control with, you know, gee, the Christians have all the power. Man, that just didn't fly with the audience. You know, they really went right after him.
Yeah, I mean, is the system, whether it's the media or government, are they hypersensitive or are they concerned about Christian sensibilities? Do you see that in legislation and the media? Give me a break. Obviously, I mean, everything's about Jewish sensibilities. In Canada, they passed a law. It makes it a criminal offense to vocally question or express skepticism towards the Holocaust narrative. You go to jail for that. Now, there is not a law. What if you verbally or publicly question the divinity of Jesus Christ or the Holy Trinity or, you know, or the resurrection? Do you go to jail for that? Okay, so who's in control in Canada? I'm just pointing that out. Now,
it's transparent.
Yeah. Now, yeah, John Stewart talking about, you know, I can't wait for a Christian president.
Yeah.
Okay, because you all know that all power resides in the presidency and the various politicians we elect, or at least we're allowed to elect or select, or that are selected to supposedly represent us. There's no powers, you know, behind the scenes. There's no great eminence. There's no special interest groups or secret societies or networking and these things. I mean, do you think the president, Joe Biden's in charge? Are people that naive that there aren't other, you know, organized interests that allow him, that install him as president, or other presidents been installed
right.
to do their bidding? Right. I mean, I'm thinking, well, I don't know. Does the name Bernard Baruch come to mind, or Samuel Untermeyer, or Rabbi Stephen Wise? Or the ADL, or B'nai B'rith, or what's who's another one? Larry Fink, the guy. I don't know who's the guy who owns Home Depot. You know, it's like all these.
Well, how about Victoria Nuland and the Institute for the Study of War,
you have this dross zombie as president, but the people who hold the important cabinet posts, the six most important cabinets in the Biden administration, are all Jewish.
Yeah. And of course, all of the intelligence agencies
are just
controlled by Jews. And so,
you know, Google, the media all run by Jews, infiltrated by Israeli agents, Unit 8200. And so are people that naive?
Well, this is the thing. That's why I think Stewart was so nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when he first brought out the meme about, gee, there's nothing but Christian presidents, you know, 10 years ago, it was still viable as mind control. I don't think he really believed that it was going to work as mind control. I think he was in his routine. He had the script, but the confidence just wasn't there. I watched it a couple times because I was curious if I was hallucinating this impression, but I came to the conclusion, no, he's definitely worried. It isn't, of course, what Chappelle was talking about. He's worried about the whole mind control power of the traumatized and eternal victim Jew as a element in the mind control over the political system. That's really what he was concerned about. And that's why I was so happy to see Chappelle, you know, have that monologue, because these are little steps, but they are steps. We're steadily moving in the direction that will enable the common people to start talking about it. But it will never happen. It's sort of like vaccine damage. There will never be an honest story about it in mainstream media. They can never have such a, you know, a kind of a questioning, because it's indefensible, right? So the only thing they can do is to just, you know, stop the discussion. And the same thing is happening with the eternal victim, kind of mind control element.
That, well, people are laughing at it now. Jonathan Greenblatt sends out a tweet saying, it's about time for Jews to start organizing and using, flexing their influence in business and finance. What do you, been the story for a century in this country. Like I said, kind of Jacob Schiff, Paul Warburg, the Rothschilds, George Soros, goes through the generations.
Bernard Baruch.
I mean, it's like all these oligarchs, you know, working behind the scenes. These are the eminence grays, if you will, Jewish eminence grays that are controlling the puppet politicians, that are having, are blackmailing them or bribing them, or using their control of the media. Even someone, I mean, a good example is with the ADL, which was created in the wake of the Leo Frank lynching. Well, Leo Frank wasn't innocent. He was lynched because Jewish powers brought the bear to get him off the hook, to buy clemency, you know, from the corrupt governor, another Shabbos goy, you know, doing the work. And so the people, this is not going to happen. We go through a trial, give him a fair trial. He raped a 13-year-old girl, murdered her, you know, he was given a fair trial, and they had enough agency to see that justice was done. They hung him right outside in front of Mary Fagan's home, you know. You know, so, but then this is the genesis for the ADL to cover up a Jewish crime. And what matters to them more is the fact that a young girl was raped and murdered, the fact that they had to cover up for a fellow Jew. And this is the problem, like, you know, again, it's just the solipsism and narcissism of these people. And they're neurotic about it. And this lack of self-awareness, it just looks bad. And they this is why Tablet Magazine, they ran an article saying that ADL needs to be closed up because they're doing more harm than good. And, you know, a lot of Jews have been very critical of Jonathan Greenblatt's leadership there, because he's too partisan. He's too out in the open about these things. They have to work from behind the scenes. They traditionally practice dynamic silence. Now they're openly talking about it. And again, this is always their downfall. They go too far. They don't know limits. And they get the reaction. Now, Chappelle thing, he's turned anti-Semitism into a joke. People are laughing at it because the hand's been overplayed several times at this point. Regardless of what you think happened, you know, during World War II, it's been overplayed. And people who, you know, are sick of it.
And that enables us to start to unravel the mind control. And so that was kind of, you know, watching Stuart with his weak, comedy monologue, I thought he is afraid that people will realize he's lying. And when he had the show and he did the same monologue, I've seen it a couple times, those times he was very confident. He thought he was invisible, that his humor was, you know, was real, and that that they're, Gentile power is so self-evident and, you know, monolithic that us poor Jews, we can't really, you know, we can barely, you know, breathe. Well, I didn't get that last week. I thought it was just the opposite. I thought, you know, he really is worried. He doesn't think this is working, and it's not working. In other words, the reason why he's afraid of being seen as a liar is because that's what's happening. People are starting to see that the sophistry and just the outright lies that, these people use to control us.
Yeah, this is a problem that Norman Potter has written in the 1960s when he said, I think it was an article he called our Negro Problem, in the terminology of the day. And he was criticizing the Jews for riling up the Negro population, getting revved up for revolution, because the rich Jews didn't mind doing this. It was the little Jews like in Bensonhurst, and those neighborhoods that had to deal with the crime. Because they get all revved up and they start attacking Jews because Jews were white. And he's talking about the crime. You're making it hard for us. Well, that's always been the strategy, because as the saying goes, it's the Trotskys that make the revolution. It's the Bronsons that pay for it. Well, and they're willing to sacrifice, you know, they're willing to put up with that. because the larger issue is, again, is the maintenance of Jewish power. And you do that by creating, one thing is you create you create instability in the society, exploit, fissures or problems inside, like America's racial problem, white versus black. You exploit that. You don't solve it. You exploit it. That's what they did in the South, to expand Jewish power. It's also there to create a sense of group cohesion through an identity as a victim. And so you're going to create a lot of bad behavior, and then they'll play the victim, and that creates that, that reinforces the rabbinical tyranny that the Jews been under, since the since the first century.
And you know something, it's, I could be wrong, but man, I have a great number of Jewish friends, believe it or not. And
are you buying time, Joe, like Dave Chappelle?
and I am sensing that there is a kind of righteousness. In other words, there are a lot of Jews that are not on the inside. In fact, I would say the majority, and they're wondering if something is up, because like Pfizer, the Israeli company, you can imagine a lot of my friends are anti-vax, and they are questioning if there there's a kind of ethnic kind of malevolence, in back of this. And of course, I always am fascinated when I even hear, a strand of that, kind of idea, and I can sense it. I think it's really happening everywhere. Really,
from what I understand, it's an Ashkenazi versus Sephardic thing. I don't know.
Maybe element. Yeah. But even inside the Ashkenazi, I think there are lines of sort of understanding and need to know levels, and of course it's a very Masonic, levels upon levels. And I think that the bottom levels are starting to sense that there's something that's wrong.
That statement, I reject anti-Semitism, condemn anti-Semitism in all its forms. How many forms does it take? Shouldn't that create a pause and thought, wait a second, how many ways does it manifest itself? And if it does, maybe we're doing something wrong here, or maybe we're behaving.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that the grammar gives it away. I mean, it's incoherent grammar, and it's like, it just shows that the idea is, and there's something wrong with the idea in back of that. And, Tim, I was thinking that we've been talking about some of the problems, Jewish issues. Maybe we should transition to something else. Perhaps we should start discussing the FTX, crack up in the last week. I mean, to get away from sort of that kind of, discussion of the problem.
It was funny because the first time I heard FTX was, I was watching the Super Bowl last year, watching the Cincinnati Bengals losing to the Super Bowl, and there's an ad with Larry David in it. Now those ads aren't cheap, but I thought, FTX, and basically it's him without history rejecting all these good ideas, the light bulb, the wheel, and then here we have cryptocurrency. So here we have the collapse of this cryptocurrency exchange, FTX. It seems big. It could be a history changing event. It turns out supposedly the largest single day loss of assets in history. I don't know if there are any assets though. So what is this? Billions of dollars just kind of evaporated, and it's not clear what happened to that money. It's just gone. It's just, it's like, what type of economy is this?
Yeah, there's just no way. We just don't know what happened. It was here, and now we don't have it anymore. Yeah,
but
it,
you get the idea with this FTX implosion that there's something bigger afoot here. It's almost like there's no one in charge. There's no adults in charge. I mean, the very people who should be like regulating and covering this stuff, are corrupted by it or just out to lunch. You have the founder is a 30-year-old billionaire. How did he get his money? That's not really explained. There was that guy on some small channel saying no one ever explained where he got his money. And of course, from what I saw of Mr. Fried or Bankman-Fried, Sam Bankman-Fried, wasn't very impressed. He's an overweight soy boy who has apparently shakes a lot. Is that because of the drugs he takes? Apparently sleeps on a beanbag chair or whatever, or beanbag thing. And
he's very mentally talented. He evidently went to the same school for gifted kids that Lady Gaga and Zuckerberg went to.
Okay, so he's an artist, performer?
I don't know what he actually is or was.
Yeah.
Stanford guy. But, you know, this is, this is a very, very, it isn't just, financial fraud. This is a really mental illness. This is just a kind of sickness that is inhabiting our financial world. And the it goes in so many directions. The most interesting connection, and I just am going to be fascinated to see how this actually plays out, is that the structure of FTX had a number of loopholes which enabled Bankman-Fried to be able to transfer the money, right? Because, these things are supposedly set up in certain ways, and there's diligence that's built into the system, so you just can't send the money to your girlfriend, as in this case. But someone helped him structure all of this, and this individual was Gary Gensler. Now,
well, head of the SEC.
This is a problem because,
Gary Gensler, he's Jewish.
His part-time job is the head of the Security and Exchange Commission. You wonder, we're going to do an investigation here, but exactly how will the SEC investigate the billions of dollars that disappeared when they went down a rat hole that had been created, evidently, because, this is not particularly contested that Gensler worked with Bankman-Fried in order to set up, kind of what was claimed to be a legal way that the money could be properly invested that came in. And then from here, it just gets bizarre because these rat holes that were built into this supposedly secure system, because remember, FTX is cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. It's an exchange of cryptocurrency, but it also creates a cryptocurrency, and it's supposed to have a kind of blockchain control that you can't really break. You're supposed to know where things are. There's this at least illusion that's being given to the public. But anyway, it didn't work here, and you ended up with the money that was coming in, particularly donations, because FTX had gotten the contract with the Democratic Party to be the place where cryptocurrency would come in from donations. And this then went to the Ukraine. And now the Ukraine then reinvested the money. So in other words, and again, who knows if this will ever come out, but just the rumors on the internet, which are supported very strongly with some facts, are that then the Ukraine turned around and decided to invest a lot of the money backwards to the United States so that there would be asset growth of the donations, because you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And now that money has disappeared too. The only money that can be traced that I spent like a couple hours trying to, where did it go? Tim, there is only one flow of money coming from FTX that can actually be documented. And it is the donations it made to the Democratic Party.
About $40 million.
Or more, it's way more than that. But the thing is, it enabled the individual, Bankman-Fried, to, he evidently was the second largest individual donor to the Democratic Party.
Largest being George Soros, I believe, right?
Yeah, Soros was number one, yeah, of course. Yeah. So anyway, but you see, so Bankman-Fried, his father is a Stanford professor who teaches tax law. Now here's the thing. So you have Gensler, the Bankman-Fried family, and then you have Caroline Ellison. Now, she was a girlfriend at one time of Bankman-Fried, and she ran the Alameda investment firm or fund that the money is supposed to have disappeared down the rabbit hole.
Isn't she like in Asia somewhere now?
Yeah, I don't know, but
on the run.
But her mother is a fundraiser for the Democratic Party and ran Mind the Gap, which of the you know, which, you know, again, internet rumor time, you know, is responsible for ballot harvesting for the Democratic Party. So now all of these individuals, and including, as best I can determine, because I wanted to, you know, find the truth out here, including the 10 friends of Bankman-Fried who lived with him in the $40 million penthouse in the Bahamas, who were engaged in a kind of round robin sexual.
Oh, yes. These are the people running your company.
Right. Which now Carolyn Ellison then commented on it in a tweet, comparing it to their activity to the harem of Genghis Khan. I mean, I wish I was making this up, brother. I'm not. This is literally. So you have these. Now, the defining characteristic of all these individuals, best I can tell, is they're all Jews. Now, that is correct. They are all Jews. I don't know if that's the most, I mean, if this was, you know, kind of, it's like when you think of like the mafia, you know, as a Sicilian organization, which it really wasn't. It's actually very Jewish, but the popular characterization of it being Sicilian. If you think of the FTX kind of controlling personalities, you have to wonder if, you know, the kind of subjects we had discussed in the first half of the show weren't in play here, because, you know, they have one Asian, his name is Wang. And what's interesting is no one knows who he is or where he is. And the only pictures of him are taken from behind. And of course, Wang is sort of a hard, you know, it's hard to trace down. And I'm just going to digress because this is kind of amusing. I knew a group of people in New Zealand, and they ran a tax dodge company. They would basically help companies that were, you know, kind of engaged in struggles with the IRS. And their technique was, is they would move the companies and the debt from out of the individual who was being attacked to some other place that this other individual now would take on the full responsibilities. And then the IRS would try to come after them. And the final resting spot of where all of the debt and the, you know, financial chaos would end up would be in Shanghai. And the owner of the company's last name would be Lee. So the thing is, we now have Wang.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck finding Wang. He may be in China, and I'm sure he can be done with it. But anyway, it's the whole thing. Now, I just, and I would be amiss here if I didn't point out that I think the whole thing is theatrical. I even think the name Bankman-Fried that doesn't strike me as being, you know, kind of real. What I think here is that Bankman-Fried is basically, you know, he's akin to Monica Lewinsky, being, you know, a lifetime actor to help kind of normalize and usher in the era of pornography, right? Mm-hmm. I think Bankman-Fried is, and this whole, you know, all of the money being lost is, will end up with the idea of a need for regulation over cryptocurrency. And you know what? I'm betting that you're going to have central bank digital currency.
Yeah, it's a pretext for more regulation.
Exactly. In fact, I think Elizabeth Warren even, who was involved in all of this, believe it or not, she then, you know, started out with this idea of, well, we just have to have it. Now, this isn't going to directly lead to it. It's sort of like how they, you know, how they deal with pandemics and gun control. You have this incrementalism. But this is certainly a step in this direction. I mean, this is just this catastrophic collapse and the lack of any kind of control or even self-restraint is just monumental here, right? And so this is like putting in bold relief the idea that the cryptocurrencies need to have strict government control, and so we have to move in that direction. I think that's what you're really working with here. It's just a bunch of Lifetime actors. This is a script. And, you know, unfortunately, I think the money that's lost is real enough. But I think the money all ends up, you know, I mean, we kind of know where some of it goes. And I think we can imagine where the rest of it goes. It's just, you know, this is a way to, you know, make cryptocurrency something that people will accept the idea of government regulation regarding.
Yeah, money is never really destroyed. It's just like matter. You can't destroy it. It just changes forms and whatever it's forms or it gets, because money really is time and energy. It's just how we quantify it. Yeah, understood. There's an interesting post by the New York Times. It's, I don't know if this has been canceled yet, but New York Times events. There's a tweet here. November 30th, 2022, New York City, premier sponsor Accenture. Apparently next week, yeah, the New York Times, in partnership with the World Economic Forum, partner Accenture, is supposed to be hosting a live event with Sam Bankman-Fried. Sitting next to him will be President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine and Mark Zuckerberg of Meta, you know, formerly Facebook, and of course, our esteemed Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen. Now, what's the common, what's the pattern here?
They're all Presbyterian?
They're all Presbyterians. Of course, you know, of course, Zelensky's running a big scam operation in Ukraine, sucking in aid, doing NATO's bidding, I guess, or whatever. Of course, Zuckerberg was set up by the CIA, and of course, Sam Bankman-Fried, wherever he is, and of course, Janet Yellen's running, she's running the biggest bond fraud operation in the history of the world. That's the U.S. Treasury debt system. So yeah, it's all something else. So basically what happened was money was going into Ukraine to supposedly fight the evil Ruskies to save democracy and pornography and transgenderism, because that's what democracy is now. Abortion, whatever, sodomy. That money then was kicked back to FTX, which then donated tens of millions of dollars to Democratic campaigns for the midterms. So basically just a money laundering operation.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that money's being sopped up. Yeah, it is sort of a way to give a black eye to crypto. Cryptos, I've never quite liked it because I don't understand it. And to me, when you're dealing with financial instruments that you don't understand, I'm suspicious about it. Maybe I'm just not bright enough. But it is crypto. It's an exchange. Basically, people own crypto and they exchange things, and that then takes on the element of a currency. But it really is a currency, because a currency needs sovereign backing. You know, basically,
yeah, I mean,
that's what the dollar. I mean, the strength of the dollar is the U.S. military and the U.S. government. Its ability to shoot you if you don't do what they say. And crypto is an end run. It's a way to get around hedge inflation, these things. You can make money on it. But the thing about it is with crypto, you can create cryptos, but you can't, the people creating the cryptos don't create dollars. At some point, you got to turn it into dollars. So its value depends on the amount of dollars that are sloshing around, and, you know, so, and vice versa. And supposedly the blockchain disciplines this. For one, understand Bitcoin is a higher quality system. And it's much more trust. I know it took a hit, but it's supposedly rebounding because the system is more secure. But you're right, in an era when they're trying to usher in central bank digital currencies by tanking fiat dollars, the US dollar, the war on the US dollar debt, and US debt market, US debt exploding, which is a war on all currencies. This is a transition point to central bank digital currencies. And of course, a stumbling block for that would be the existence of reliable exchanges like Bitcoin, which aren't as regulated as they would like. And this creates a pretext for that thing, a blowout, a scandal, and these things. In the meantime, you can get rich in the process. You know, a few people.
I'm a skeptic and a cynic. And I thought when I first learned about Bitcoin that it was an op.
Some say it was designed by the National Security Agency.
Right.
And white paper, I
think that is correct. And I think that, you know, the individual supposedly came up with some mysterious Asian with the last name of Lee, you know, he lives in Shanghai. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is ridiculous.
I'm gonna throw something at it. Getting these complex financial instruments is a lot of the stuff, whether it's exchange traded funds or tranches. I mean, you still end up back with 2008 and all these financial instruments.
2008.
But all these things. My point is, how about this? The people running the financial system should be moral individuals and trustworthy. because any system you have, whether it's gold or fiat dollars, anything, if you have people that are running it that are untrustworthy, that are immoral, that are unethical, it's not going to function properly.
Of course.
Maybe I'm just naive, but
no, I think you're absolutely right.
And doesn't banking and finance suggest you have to trust the person? And maybe this doesn't exist in our, you know, in our Jewified society where banker, you know, buyer beware, we just can't have trust anymore. It's all about this. And so you got to hedge this and scheme to get around our corrupt financial system. How about you create an honest, above board financial system? I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, if you had something like that, then a husband with a normal job could have a stay-at-home wife, three kids, and own his house. You know, like America in 1948. So
yeah, you wouldn't have compound interest.
That's no good. So, you know, here we are today, and the debt is will destroy us if the vaccine doesn't, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the crypto, I think, was just a way to transition to a fiat currency. And in this case, it is totally fiat. It's not even, there's not even any, you know, paper bills to, you know, to possess. that could be monitored. That's all it is. It's just the and it's, of course, the sophistry is that, well, with blockchain, you know, it's a secret. No one knows. That's absolute rubbish. Anyone who knows anything about computers.
Well, talk about financial fraud. What was quantitative easing? What is right. quantitative? This is fraud. I mean, every 10, 15 years, there's a blowout. There's a scandal. And what happens is then there's a bailout. So the bondholders, the debtors are made full and everyone has to take a haircut. That's kind of what that's been the trend since the country was founded. It goes back to Alexander Hamilton and with Shays' Rebellion and the assumption of the debt by the federal government and the scam they pulled on all the farmers and soldiers that held the debt. When Hamilton's guys, I guess he was working for Robert Morris in New York, with ties to the Bank of England, of course.
Yeah. Well,
but my point is that there was a bond for the country got started on a bond fraud.
Of course. I mean, and the 08 bond fraud is just hellacious. Yeah. I mean, all of the central bank, like just take Goldman Sachs, on its junk bonds was repaid at par mm-hmm. by the Federal Reserve, which of course it owns. The credit was created. It becomes an asset on the at par on their balance sheet, right? So they could then continue to, work at, go forward as an institution with all these profits and bonuses for everybody. My friend who owned GM bonds, which also suffered during this time, as you recall, the GM bankruptcy, mm-hmm. he was paid back at 5 cents on the dollar. So not at par, you see. So this is the differences between the regular citizen, virtuous, and the central banks, malevolent. Mm-hmm. And they use their power to deliberately impoverish us because this makes us easier to control. And of course, on the other side, it enriches them. So you end up with, you know, Bankman fried in this particular op, living in his $40 million penthouse in the Bahamas, and bearing in mind, things are fairly inexpensive in the Bahamas, a $40 million penthouse. I mean, this thing must have been quite the, fancy kind of digs. So, you know, they live like that and they carry on as they do.
What are the chances that Bankman-Fried has a bad reaction to the vaccine or something?
I think he'll disappear or some such. I mean, but even the, I just think that this is, when I heard the name, I was just curious. I mean, and this is before the blow up. I said,
well, he did a lot of talking about what he was giving his money to. There was talk about him being altruism, philanthropy and giving to her things like
Bill Gates.
Yeah, he wanted to give billions away and give back to he had all this talk. I think the company itself had a very high ESG rating.
Very high. So he had publicly stated that he intended to donate $1 billion to the Democratic Party in 2024. So in other words, he had stated, you know, he was just basically going to ensure that the Democratic candidate was elected president. You know, don't know how that all fits into the theatrical structure of everything, but I mean, that's actually what he said. So,
you know, so by saying he's using his largesse, ill-gotten gains to fund more of this ESG, World Economic Forum agenda stuff.
Of course.
His transhumanism, course. Technocracy. Yeah.
And then, you know,
the cover of altruism and philanthropy.
You could just take the boxes of the satanic categories, transgender, father in the household. I mean, you just would make a list, and you know this individual would be 100%. He would not, there wouldn't be one single issue that he wasn't on hand in hand with Satan. it's absolutely clear that this is, you know, who he is. And I think that he's an artificial character. I honestly believe that, like Lewinsky was, you know, he was created to, be a straw man, and now he'll be the evil, and they'll blame it on the excesses, of like easy money. But I just think it looks to me like really all they're doing is just creating an egregious example, the most egregious theatrical example imaginable, so that they, you know, their acolytes in the Congress can then scream, well, we got to have regulation. And of course, this will occur at the same time the dollar will start to weaken. I think that'll happen in the next couple of years. And then, you know, we need to transition to a central bank digital currency. I really do believe that. And of course, this, again, I'm not, you know, this isn't like one of my famous predictions. This is what the World Economic Forum has publicly stated, that, we need to start transitioning to some extent. They don't say how much of it, but I can assure you it ends up at 100% to a central bank digital currency.
This even though they presided over the global economy.
Because that's how they can monitor us, yeah. You see. With a central bank digital currency, an international structure, they can watch every single transition, purchase anything, you know. So every transaction.
Well, the case is not as if with you have cash, you can go anywhere and buy whatever you want. No one's going to know if you spent cash.
Sure.
Whereas this, they can turn it off for specific purposes, or turn it off outside a geographical area. So you can.
It was interesting is that at the G20 meeting, they also brought out the idea of we desperately need a kind of worldwide computerized vaccine passport system to prevent.
They're still pushing that, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is the future, because you combine that with a central bank digital currency, and they really have us, you know, not just enslaved but imprisoned. This is going to be interesting, because think about the 20-25% of Europeans who didn't take the vaccine. Mm-hmm. How many of those as a percentage do you think feel bad about their decision to not take it at this point? You know, I mean, I would think, 100% would not take it a second if it was brought out again. And then to that, you're going to add, like in Australia, 45% of the people who took the vaccine regret it. So when they bring this out, man, they better have a really powerful plague or something to back it up, because I think there'll be just violent political reaction to it.
That was one of the other, charities that Sam wanted to donate to plague containment. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that Sam's brother and his aunt, I think, I mean, it's just one absolute cesspool. His brother is basically one of the leaders of pandemic awareness, both charity and investment. So while, Sam was working, the cryptocurrency exchange, his brother was very powerful in this world of trying to and investing in companies that would help us prepare for the next pandemic.
The next one.
Right. So they're already planning the next one. you know, his girlfriend's, oh, no, it wasn't his girlfriend, but I think it was on Sam's side of the family. You get these, but they had like three or four people in the family that were involved in AIDS research and pandemic preparation, you know. So
it's all the big biopharmaceutical scam.
Yeah, with cryptocurrency moving everything around.
And by the way, yeah, the ADL is giving some metal to Borla, head of Pfizer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
Well,
did you see Chucky Schumer came out and announced we need more immigration? He came out. Yeah. He said because the native population just isn't reproducing at a replacement level. We just need these people to come in because the economy is starved for labor. Well, Chucky, why is the birth rate so low?
Right.
For the native population, as might be due, but for decades we've heard about how overpopulation is a problem and how women shouldn't have be mothers, they should have careers and all the sexual perversion that you people have been promoting that might have something to do with the lower population. Then we hear there's too many people, all of a sudden we find out there aren't enough people. And then, but the answer is to bring in replacements.
Right.
And then if you point this out, you're a great replacement conspiracy theorist, even though he's openly calling for it.
A racist. The Italian prime minister, this woman.
Maloney?
Yeah. I how do you pronounce her last name?
Maloney. It's Giorgia Maloney. Yeah.
Anyway, she gave a great rant on television.
Mm-hmm.
And she pointed out that France has a scam working in Africa, 14 countries, where they actually print the currency. I don't know if you ever heard about this, but so they print the currency and they then work the exchange of the currency into other currencies. And so France ends up basically with, you know, like taking a piece of the action of every single transaction in these 14 countries. And the Italian prime minister, she gets on TV and she has a picture of a black kid going down into a mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little kid. And she goes, you know, this kid is going down to mine gold. And that gold is going to come out and it's going to be sold. And then they will be repaid with this French colonial currency, because this is the only currency that they can use in their country. And she goes, and thereby France will take a piece of the gold of every single ounce mm-hmm. that the kid can bring out and put it in their own coffers. And then she goes, you know, the thing we need to do is not import more Africans to France. We need to make sure that the Africans keep the benefits of their own assets that they create.
Mm-hmm.
If we are serious about helping Africans, and like the French are always, you know, their political class are always saying we need more immigrants. You know, we don't need more immigrants to help the Africans. You want to help the Africans. First of all, get rid of this absolutely colonial era scam that France is running to like take a vigorish out of every single transaction that goes on in these countries. And she really came across, I mean, I don't know if she's real or not, but it was good theater, I'll tell you. And it's you know, these are small steps, but they're all in the right direction.
Yeah, because that type of operation that doesn't get the headlines in the financial press or the newspapers, that type of exploitation. But it does lead to the humanitarian crises, not to mention the various civil wars and the stuff that are a product of the extraction of resources from that continent under terms that the international corporations find favorable, as opposed to having to pay a higher price for them if you dealt with these people in an ethically moral way. That's neoliberal exploitation under the guise of decolonization, by the way. That's why apartheid was destroyed, again using that cover as a pretext. Human rights as a cover to extend their dominion and actually exploit these people even worse than they were before.
On the genocide front, both declining birth rates and slow but steady increases in all causes mortality are occurring in a visible way in at least 14 countries. So you're looking at a slow motion genocide from both directions, both, you know, by early mortality and by lack of any kind of, you know, replacement generation. So the future is bright, I would say, in terms of a visible signal that independent media can use to, agitate the population to, more effective political action, because I think that I was looking at some of the stats on Europe. I'd been saying that there was just going to be a horror story in Central Europe, particularly this winter. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think what I think you're looking at is more incremental now. That's my opinion. I'm seeing that looks like they can squeak by both in terms of food and energy, at least if I'm getting real data, which who knows, but it's going to be tight. And if it's a cold winter, you could have like a big number. I think the real thing we're dealing with here is just steady incremental movement into a post-electric society, mm-hmm. right? Just, everything does seem to be slowly either being blown up or, the crops just aren't, getting to, the volume that they should. I mean, everything is heading toward, a structure of like the support for a smaller population. And in any case, if it's going to be 1 year or 10 years, I don't care. It's still the signal that we have to get out to people to, if we're ever going to get them to stop just, walking around in a trance, which is, what they have been doing, and start moving toward like understanding the power that is in control of our political system. And that's why, Chappelle's monologue, I was, as I said, it wasn't really what he was saying. I mean, the jokes were, pretty good, but it was the natural way that the audience laughed, that the audience was felt free to accept, this as something we could even, talk about at all. So I continue to think that that the diminishing returns are actually occurring, and that from here on out you're going to get more situations like Jon Stewart's monologue, which I think turns more people off than actually promotes mind control.
Yeah, people aren't buying it anymore, and they're really his sort of his humor. Can't wait for the day for a Christian president, and as if there's no power operating behind the scenes.
Yeah, think about that statement. I mean, just think about what is in back of it. It's literally, and this is a guy, his brother is like a big player in the government financial world, right?
So yeah, didn't he head up the stock market for a while?
Yeah, that's right. He was like one of the heads of the
stock exchange. Yeah.
Right, so. So the thing is, the idea that that he would not be aware of this is just a ludicrous, right? And so the humor was weak. He felt he was not confident, and his nervousness suggested to me that he's aware that people think he's lying, and he is. So this is going to be interesting. If these are become trends, then. I mean, imagine if in a year Chappelle's monologue is routine.
He admits it when he said, "I don't think this is the way it should be handled. People should be able to discuss these things, well and good. But the only problem is they're not able to discuss things, which exposes the fact there is a power structure which exists."
Yeah.
So you're saying that it shouldn't be done, but it was done. So what power structure did that? So.
Well said. Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, have a happy Thanksgiving. I hope everything goes well. We will get them next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, brother. Bye-bye.